Welcome back to Gals in the Pit Wall. I'm your host, Catherine. It's just me again this week. I need to stop saying, oh my God, editing the podcast last week, the amount of times I said, so I'm very sorry for that. I'm going to try and stop. It's just, I can't pause silently, apparently. I was literally about to do it again. Oh my God, I've given myself a complex. Anyway, last week I said that it'd been a bit of a boring week. Not much had happened. I take it back. Because this week everything happened. I definitely jinxed it. I also said last week that I wasn't going to talk about Christian Horner because I wanted to keep things lighthearted. But I do feel I'm going to talk about it right now, just a little bit, after the recent developments that have kind of happened. So I got a lot of flack on TikTok because my videos ended up in the wrong side of the algorithm. But I'm still going to talk about it anyway. I saw that the Fan Behaviour podcast, they talked about it and they got a lot of heat. And I don't think it's fair that they're the only ones. So I'll put myself in the firing line with this. So I'm guessing if you're watching this, you probably have an idea. If not, Christian Horner, I'm going to be careful what I say here. Christian Horner allegedly sent some inappropriate messages, had an inappropriate relationship with an employee. That employee's taken that to Red Bull and said they're not happy about it. And then Christian Horner went through an internal investigation and it was dismissed. Following that, a Google Drive was leaked with all the text and the pictures sent to loads of journalists. So people have seen the evidence now. Allegedly, these are real. And after that, I'm guessing because of the leak, but we don't know because there's zero transparency with Red Bull and the FIA. Oh, after that, the FIA said they were going to look into it. Hour and a half later, Christian and the president of the FIA were seen hugging. So, but I have... Like, my feelings on the FIA is a whole podcast in itself for another day. And then following all this, and there's no transparency about why, but we're going to assume it's to do with the leaks. The employee, the female employee, was suspended from Red Bull, which obviously sparked a lot of outrage, including outrage in myself. Because imagine this has happened to you, allegedly, and you're the whistleblower on what's going on, and then you are suspended, and the person who's done this faces zero consequences at all. And as a further development, Helmut Marko, advisor of Red Bull, he was also being investigated for leaks to the media, may or may not be in relation to the Christian Horner stuff. And he'd also been talking a lot because Helmut Marko doesn't know how to do no comment in interviews, so he will talk about things. He was also getting investigated and they were apparently going to suspend him, but they haven't. And like, I think he's just been kind of told to rein it in from what he said. But he's not leaving. Because if he left Red Bull, Max Verstappen would have left. And apparently Max is looking, or there's talks with Mercedes because Max won't stay if Helmut doesn't stay. Because Helmut's very important to him. So that was a whole thing. But I kind of knew they weren't going to suspend Helmut because they don't want to risk losing Max. Like that's too, the cons in that one outweigh the pros of getting rid of Helmut. And like, if they didn't sack him over sort of racist comments he'd made, they weren't going to sack him over this. Let's be real. And like, there's so many like kind of theories behind why all this is happening. I'm not going to go into those because obviously those are just theories. They're not evidence-based or not particularly evidence-based. But yeah, it's kind of ongoing. And Martin Brundle himself said it wasn't going to be the last of it. He said that in Bahrain and he was right because the plot keeps thickening. And now the latest update is apparently Red Bull are set to announce that they're letting go of Christian Horner before the Australian Grand Prix in 2 weeks. But if there's any truth in that, I don't know. I think it came from F1 Insider who said that. So, you know, do it if you want with that information, but I just wanted to talk about it. But following all this, obviously the media and the journalists were asking the drivers questions. And I agree that that's wrong. That like they are doing their jobs and obviously they were going to ask, but I agree that's wrong in the sense of they are trying to make a big story out of something horrible that's happened and they're trying to sort of sensationalize it. But also it then resulted in some drivers making not so great statements. And I firmly believe the best thing they could have done, really, for most of them, is to say nothing. Lewis made a great statement, and actually I'm going to read that to you just to set the standard. Because of course Lewis was going to handle this in a correct manner. And I got to scroll through all my ADHD screenshots. But Lewis did handle this in a Lewis Hamilton way, which is the correct way. And like I admire Lewis Hamilton so much. Is he my favourite driver? No, but as a person, he's just genuinely a good human being, like just through and through. I kind of fear for how the sport will be after he leaves, because obviously him and Seb were kind of the ones that were leading the battle of sort of inclusivity and creating a safe and equal environment. So it's a bit worrying. So Lewis, if you could just sort of stay forever. Why can't I find the statement? This is, here we go. I've got her. So this is what Lewis said about everything with Christian Horner. He says, as someone who loves the sport, it's really disappointing to see what's happening right now. It doesn't look good to the outside world, and it doesn't look good from the inside either, I assure you. I think it's a really, really important time for the sport to really show and adhere to its values, holding us accountable for our actions. It's a really crucial moment in terms of what we project to the world and how that's managed, and it hasn't been handled very well so far, and transparency is really key. I really hope to see progress, but I hope it's not a year that continues like this. It highlights some of the problems we have in the sport as well. We talk about diversity and inclusion, and it is essential that people feel comfortable in this environment, but that is clearly not the case. Yeah. So that's the standard of, if anyone was going to speak on it, of course it was going to be Lewis. And that's really the best thing anyone could have said. I can't fault him on that. We love you, Lewis. He looks like my little grandson up there on the shelves. And then George Russell, in a written interview, made a pretty good statement too, kind of along the same lines, which is what you'd expect from Mercedes. Zach Brown and James Vowles also spoke very well on it, so big respect to them. Although there's debate about obviously what their motivations are behind it all. And then we have drivers who obviously didn't speak on it, like Max, because he's like, there's just nothing that he could say that was going to go down well, I think, because he's too close to the situation. But like people like Max didn't say anything. Charles, most of the grid just went for saying nothing, which is probably the best thing to do. Now, a couple of drivers decided to speak and answer the questions, and I want to highlight one in particular, but this is not a target. This is just the first one I saw, and I made a video on this. Daniel Ricciardo. Daniel, obviously somebody who likes to speak. Daniel's also someone who's after the Red Bull seat and might be kissing Christian Horner's ass a little bit for this Red Bull seat. I've kind of fallen out of favour with... No, Daniel's kind of fallen out of favour with me. Especially because I think he's acting like he's entitled to this Red Bull seat. And I don't, as I've said before, I don't even think he's in the top three contenders for it, realistically. He's being outperformed by Yuki again. I think you could give Daniel the benefit of the doubt last season because of coming in late and then having his injury. But he was outperformed by Yuki. And he's being outperformed by Yuki again. So, you know, in that sense, Yuki has more of he should have more of a right to the Red Bull suit, and he's waited his whole career for this. Daniel was the one that left Red Bull. But also there's other people in the mix too for this, and younger people like Liam Lawson. But anyway, tangent. Daniel spoke and he said that he just wanted it to go away, basically. And other drivers too, I think the kind of keywords that were used were distraction and noise. And the other two drivers I'd like to highlight in this are Valtteri Bottas and Alex Albon, quite disappointingly. And like, yeah, there's a lot of debate around this, and I've already taken the heat for talking about this, so I have no qualms about talking about it again. And I just like to highlight that the two worst offenders there, obviously Daniel and Valtteri, because Alex was like, okay. Yeah, the keywords used in this were distraction and noise, and the kind of two drivers that said the worst things were Daniel and Valtteri Bottas, and they ended up being the drivers who have like two of the worst races of the weekend. They finished at the back. They had really slow pit stops. I think, who was it that was on a 42 seconder? That was Daniel, I think. Like, something like 42 seconds on that pit stop. And also finished behind a man with 20 seconds worth of penalties, which we'll talk about later. So, you know, if you don't believe in karma, maybe you should. But Daniel's attitude was stinking, and you know he's just doing it because he wants Christian Horner to, you know, put him in the Red Bull. So, you know, his morals are out the window. But also I accept that a lot of these drivers just aren't going to care about this because they've been in this bubble of driving their whole lives, and it's a very masculine bubble. And so this is like, it's not really something that men have to worry about generally anywhere or think about, but even less so in this bubble. But still, I hate the argument of, oh, but the drivers are just trying to do their job. It has nothing to do with them. Surely this employee was just trying to do her job too. That's all she wanted to do. She wanted to come in and do her job. So I'm going to leave it at that. Food for thought, I think. And there, into the more lighthearted stuff, more or less, of the rest of the weekend. So I miss free practice again, because Saturday race means Thursday free practices for the first two. And I have classes for university and things to be doing. So no free practice for me. But I did get FP3. Because, very excitingly, well, not exciting for Carlos Sainz, but very exciting for Ollie Bearman. Carlos was ill. That was kind of a big headline. He still did the first two free practices, and then it came out he had appendicitis and he was going for a surgery. So he's out. They bring in 18-year-old Ollie Bearman, who had just gone, who just achieved pole in F2 in the same weekend, and was now, you know, abandoning that to come and drive for Ferrari, which makes him, at 18 years old, the youngest Ferrari driver ever. So amongst all these other stats that I'm going to relay throughout this podcast, absolutely incredible. Yeah, third youngest driver ever on debut. Youngest ever in a Ferrari. So he came with number 38. And that was a number that was used by Mike Hawthorn in the Spanish Grand Prix in 1954. And he won that race. And, you know, the Tifosi love this sort of... superstitions, that's the word I was looking for. It was bringing in the good vibes. Of course it was bringing in the good vibes for the Tifosi. So Ollie has done F1 free practices before. We saw him last season, but that was in a Haas, which is obviously a considerably slower car and debatably easier to manage because of that. Oh yeah, and Haas were so impressed by his performance in free practice, that, including the sort of the ones that the teams have to give to rookies to come up and do in F1. They've offered him 6 sessions of free practice this season from Haas. And I did also predict him, I don't know if I predicted it on the podcast, but just in general life, that he would obviously be one of the new signings for 2025 and that he would go to Haas and drive with Nico Hülkenberg. That was my prediction. I might have said it in a previous episode. Don't know if you'll be able to find it. I'm not going to try and look. Also, the fact that it's... So he's the youngest driver on the grid, or like this weekend, he was the youngest driver on the grid by like 4 years. Because Oscar's 22. Oscar's a year older than me. And having an F1 driver on the grid that was younger than me by so much is such a humbling experience. I know a lot of people said this. It was like, fuck, I'm old. Humbling. Truly humbling. And yeah, everyone also highlighted the F1 appendicitis butterfly effect, which arguably led to, so the start with Alex Albon getting appendicitis, which brought in Nick De Vries, who then got sacked, which brought in Liam Lawson, who knocked Max out of qualifying in Singapore, which then led to Carlos winning in Singapore. We've started a new appendicitis butterfly effect with Carlos Sainz, maybe with Ollie Bearman involved, because they're kind of hoping that Carlos is going to be back for Australia in 2 weeks' time. But should he be back? I don't know. That man was in the paddock on Saturday shuffling around. Go back to your bed, Carlos. Who made you be there? Because that's so mean. So, right, my free practice notes. I haven't actually reviewed these because I couldn't be bothered. I don't actually have that many. So, yeah, Bearman was first out for the session, obviously wanting to maximize his chance on the track. Because let's just not forget here that he's missed the first two free practices. So he comes out and he's first out. So he gets a bit of empty track too, which is quite nice. And he is just under half a second behind Lewis in the first sort of laps of the session, while Lewis is on a soft, and Bearman is on a medium. And then Bearman goes quickest for the 130.2. And then Lewis reclaims it on the softs, but by 0.024 of a second. So, you know, it was looking promising, but I didn't want to get my hopes up. At this point, I was readjusting my fantasy team because Carlos was obviously in it. I was like, fuck, I need to take Carlos out. So I readjusted the fantasy team. I did debate putting Bearman in, but I thought I would jinx it if I did and that something horrible would happen, so I didn't do it. Wise choice. Oh, and then Wee Charlie went quickest on the mediums. While everyone else in the top 11, bar Ollie Bearman, were on mediums. No, we're on softs and Charles is on mediums and he went quicker. So I was getting my hopes up again. And I think an important discussion as well is that, so Behrman's teammate in F2 at the moment is Kimi Antonelli, who's in his rookie season. And Kimi is obviously this proposed replacement for Hamilton. That's why Hamilton's not staying at Mercedes. They weren't offering him a long-term contract. They want Antonelli. So really, Ollie being in F1 this weekend and setting these lap times and doing the race set the benchmark for where Antonelli's predicted performance will be, because obviously they can compare how they are in F2 at the moment, and Antonelli's doing pretty well so far, a couple of races in. Yeah, for rookie season 2, pretty impressive. So yeah, it sets the benchmark for Kimi Antonelli, but I have no doubt Ollie Bearman will be in a seat easy peasy for next season. I think it's a guarantee. Also, apparently there's a lot of plastic bags flying about the track, and like Max hit one and it, like, I don't know, weird. And then free practice then ended because Peugeot Guanyu smashed into a barrier and called a red flag. And there was also a medical car deployed, but he said he was okay. So, you know, always the most comforting thing when a driver tells you they're okay, because it was a pretty big smash. And they got the last 6 minutes of the session. So not only has Ollie Bearman missed the first two practices, but he's then had an interrupted third practice, or, well, first practice for him. On to qualifying. Possibly my favourite part of the weekend, because, you know, the race is obviously great, but sometimes there's just a few laps and they're really like, oh my god. Whereas qualifying, I'd say, has me on edge the entire time. So just to note, Max Verstappen's never qualified in the front row in Jeddah, I don't think. As far as I'm aware, correct me if I'm wrong. So, Q1. Let me just explain what happened on Friday. So Thursday night, I had to do an all-nighter because I had a uni assessment due on Friday at 12. So I did an all-nighter. I then do the all-nighter, go to my gym session at 8 till 9, come back, finish off this assignment that I've been up all night doing. That was also an all-nighter. That disappeared, like, I can't click with the sound, but like that, it disappeared and I wasn't done. Came back, finished that, did an online quiz that I had to do. Then sort of scurried around doing things I needed to do in the afternoon, watched F1 Academy, and then I went, do you know what, before qualifying, I'm going to go for a little nap. What a mistake that was. So I wake up at like 5 o'clock to my flatmate in my room, because she was sort of, you know, coming to drop me off a wee treat, because she knows I've been working hard. We love Alice, very supportive. And also, excitingly, I hit 1 million likes on TikTok, so we're celebrating that too. But anyway, she wakes me up. I look at the time and I think, oh, it's 3 o'clock, fine. It was 5, so, or after 5, so I had missed the start of qualifying, so I missed Q1. I still have no idea what happened in Q1, haven't caught up. All I know is that both Alpines, right, both Sauber's and Logan Sargeant, which was the same as last weekend, right? Q2, I was awake for this one. So, a wee red flag in Q2. I don't remember any of this. I think I was in a delusion-like state on Friday. I was so sleep-deprived, I think I had no comprehension of what was going on around me. So these notes are a bit confused, I would say. All I know is, according to these notes, there was a red flag with enough time for 2 more runs afterwards. Have I written anything else about it? Nope. Was I with it during that? Probably not. 4 red flags on Friday, apparently, according to me. And none of them were Ollie, and I've written that's very impressive. Also, Ollie was not playing it safe. For a man who'd had 1 free practice session and was coming into qualifying in a Ferrari as the youngest Ferrari driver ever, he was not cruising around. He was not, you know, taking his time to get used to it. The confidence, and it was the same in the race, the confidence in his driving was phenomenal. Just so fearless. I mean, you have to be fearless to be an F1 driver, but he was just so fierce, and he has an aggressive driving style anyway, but yeah, incredible. And then, so at the end of Q2, Ollie just missed qualifying in Q3. Lewis Hamilton went through in that P10 spot, and I have written down, Ollie was 36,000ths off of Lewis getting into Q3, so close. And Ollie's dad, bless him, pacing around the garage looking stressed, exactly how I felt watching it. Really wanted him to do well, and it was great qualifying. I mean, you've out qualified some seasoned pros. So out were Bearman, Albon, Magnussen, Ricciardo. Bernie was on presenting, by the way, and I love the way she says Ricciardo. Ricciardo and Hulkenberg gone. But Ollie, when he got out of the car, this is going to turn into the Ollie Bearman podcast. He was so like smiley when he got out of the car, just clearly really chuffed with himself, and it's great. I'm glad he wasn't beating himself up about not quite getting into Q3, because it was impressive. It was so impressive. So Q3, first flying lap. There's half a second between George in P1, who would have been having a strong weekend, and Lewis. So George still outperforming Lewis. Lewis is just, he hates the car again. He obviously, like, this has also been the first time in interviews that he's not gone, we have a lot of work to do. And like, Lewis has always made a lot of we statements because they're a team, they're a family. This is like the kind of first time he's been, they have a lot of work to do. So Lewis, I think, is just going to be like this for the rest of the season. I think we're going to see George outperforming him. Piastri went second quickest, 0.009 behind George Russell. I was getting excited for Wee Oscar. We know I love Wee Oscar. Touch the helmet. There he is. Yeah, it was looking close. And yeah, Max went, of course, very clear of everyone. And that was his first pole in Saudi Arabia by a very big margin. So, you know, we accepted our fate. We did. Before I talk about the race, I just want to have a wee moment to talk about F1 Academy. Opening weekend. If you don't know, I am the F1 Academy writer for Girls Across the Grid. I absolutely adore F1 Academy. I'm very passionate about it. I'm actually doing a little mini series over on the Gals in the Pit Wall Instagram and on my own TikTok at Kath Bruce, kind of explaining F1 Academy. I've got two videos out so far, the third one coming out, just to kind of explain if you want to get to know it. It's also free to watch on X and YouTube, like the actual F1 Academy races, if you want to go and watch them, and obviously available on Sky, ESPN, etc., depending on where you look. But it was very exciting. Very sad that I have to wait till May for the next round. So Dorian Pin, who is Mercedes nominated driver and is driving for Prema. She's the Max Verstappen of F1 Academy. I know we're only one weekend, but it's quite blatantly obvious. She was so clear of everyone, like in qualifying, over a second clear of people in the race, so far ahead. She won race one. She qualified in pole for both races. F1 Academy has two races in the weekend. Qualified on pole for both. Qualifying fastest lap sets the grid for race one, and your second fastest lap sets the grid for race two. So she had the two fastest laps of qualifying. But it was no surprise when you were watching it. You just knew that this was coming. She wins race one. Easy. Easy peasy. Race two wins. Easy peasy. Race two was a bit more chaotic, but she was so clear that she wasn't caught up in the chaos. Yeah, and so she wins race two by a fairly big margin, doesn't get caught up in a lot of it. And then checkered flag comes out at the end of the race, and she keeps driving at full pelt after this checkered flag. And everyone, like the commentators, like, oh, like what's she doing? Why hasn't she stopped? She's not realised it's over. And I think she did two or three laps after the checkered flag. I want to say two laps, though, I think. And then her team come on the radio and go, what are you doing? But they took their hot time to say something to her. And then she gets obviously frustrated with them for not saying anything. But she still wins, and she still goes and gets her trophy and stuff. But it is so weird that her team didn't come on and celebrate when she had won it, to kind of let her know. And the argument is you shouldn't rely on your team to tell you. Your flag should be the first port of call. But then there's debate about, were the flags being flown well enough? But the other drivers saw it, so, you know, up for debate that one. It takes checkered flag twice. They do the podium, she still won. And then after the race, sort of during when F1 was happening, it gets announced that she has been handed a penalty, post-race penalty for this, that drops her down to like P10 or something. Anyway, drops her out of the podium, drops her out of P1, and Abby Pulling takes P1. But Abby Pulling is obviously going to be Dorian's main contender in all of this, because she was the only one to be remotely close. And then Maya Wag was in P3. For both races as well. Another Prema driver driving for Ferrari. And she was like a fair margin behind Pulling, who was less of a margin behind Pin. I'm going to say Pin, but it's because my French accent is appalling and it's more of a pin. But it's spelled Pin and my French accent is not very good. And so Abby gets P1. And it's all a bit like, oh, and everyone's like, oh, was it a bit harsh? You know, was there not another penalty? Should the team have taken a penalty for not telling her soon enough? Don't know. But anyway, Pulling gets the win, and I am an Abby Pulling fan. So as much as I was sad for Dorian, I was very chuffed for Abby, and I will be rooting for her this season. Abby and Jess Edgar, they're my two favourites. But yeah, so a lot of excitement from F1 Academy. If you didn't watch it, you got to tune in for the next one. It was really good. I'm in the middle of writing up my race report for Girls Across the Grid, so you can go check that out when it's up. I'll try and post the links on either my own Instagram at CathBruceF1 or obviously the Gals in the Pit Wall Instagram too. Race. The race. Wow. What a race it was. So we start off, you know, very strong. Formation lap. Gasly, Pierre Gasly, is reporting gearbox issues. So as soon as the race starts, he retires. He's told the box. He's out. Gearbox gone. Also at the race start, did Lando make a joke about jumping the start in order to get ahead in an interview before the race? He did. Did he also then jump the start in the actual race? Yes. It was investigated and he didn't get a penalty, but from the onboard camera, it very much looked like he had jumped the start. But he got away with it. It was very minimal, like how much he moved, but he quite clearly had jumped the start. So that was quite funny, but also heart-wrenching. So yeah, literally as soon as the race starts, Max is pulling away so quick. First turn, Max is pulling away, gone. And Perez gets Charles off the line, but Charles gets back. I should have probably mentioned that obviously the top three in qualifying was Max, Charles, and Checo. So Checo gets Charles off the line, but then Charles gets him back, you know. Ollie Bearman, right off the start, goes for an overtake on Yuki. He was not holding back this whole race. I was so impressed by him. So impressed. I'm going to keep saying that. And Lance Stroll gets ahead of Yuki off the line. It was a very clean start, though. Yeah, and it was Russell that... Weak Russell that said that Lando jumped the start. And he was pretty correct, I'd say. Yeah, Pierre boxes, retires. And then lap two. Going into turn one, Piastri passes Alonso. Very exciting. Oh yeah, and turn one, going into lap two, Ollie and Yuki make contact after their battle for this position. Ollie was, yeah, he was clearly determined to get in the points, and it was very successful for him. And it's all pretty, like, there's some good battles going on, right? Checo gets Charles, unfortunately, but there was really nothing Charles could have done. That Red Bull is obviously mighty. And then we get to lap six, and this is where, and I'm going to use appropriate language for this, not the language I'd use when talking to my friends. Stroll goes smashing into the barrier, absolutely smashing into the barrier. He touched the wall in turn 22, I believe, which he also did during practice, I think, which I think also caused him to crash. I might have missed that. He touched the wall in turn 22, so it was yellow flagged, obviously, then a safety car. But this was so ridiculous. You don't even tell you what happens when the car's gone into the barrier. The car is destroyed. Like, and his engineer comes on the radio, obviously goes, are you okay? And Lance says, I'm okay. And then his engineer goes, oh, can you bring the car back? And Lance is literally like, I'm in the fucking wall. I'm literally in the wall. Like, what? Such a stupid thing to ask. Poor Lance. He actually has such bad luck. I'm really trying to root for him. And he ruined my fantasy team, which is the running theme of last year when I put him in, but he ruined my fantasy team again. So I like dropped down loads of places in the leagues. How annoying. So yeah, Lance Stroll in the wall. And then because of this and the safety car, everyone obviously goes in and pits. So they change on to the hard tyre. So there's a lot of double stacking going on. And a couple of people obviously didn't pit. Hamilton and Norris stayed out, which meant Norris was leading the race. We Lando leading, which is very exciting. But then in my head, I'm like, oh my God, see if he gets a penalty for jumping the start. And it, like, he somehow wins the race and then he gets a penalty for jumping the start. I think I would throw myself out the window, but didn't come to that. That would literally be so painful. Horrendously painful. Lap 9, safety car comes in, Lando restarts the race. He actually catches Max a little bit off guard going down the main straight, so it was a really good restart from Lando. This is when it really gets hell exciting, obviously besides Lando leading. This is a bit of a butterfly effect for the rest of the race, really. So lap 10, Kevin Magnussen gives Alex Albon no space in the track, and it costs Albon his front wing. It was noted by race control, obviously, and Kevin was given a penalty, a 10-second penalty for causing a collision. Obviously, they're being harsh on the penalties this year, but that was after drivers called for that. Bearman finally overtakes Yuki, getting closer to the points. And Perez gets noted for a unsafe release from the pits, which he gets a 5-second penalty for, I believe, which obviously did nothing. Because, you know, penalties are... Basically, the reason they wanted harsher penalties, I think, last year was so Red Bull couldn't get away with as much of what they were doing. But the Red Bull's so quick anyway. The penalties still don't matter. So, you know, they're in a league of their own. Lap 13, Max gets the lead back off Lando. It was inevitable. It was going to happen. Perez gets himself up into P3. Down the main straight, I noted this, okay? Down the main straight, Red Bull were 33 kilometers an hour faster with DRS. So that was fun. That was a fun little number for you. Lap 15, Lando gets cleared after being searched for jump start. One of the main battles actually in this race was Oscar and Lewis Hamilton. So Oscar was behind Lewis for so many laps. It was in DRS, may I add, and just could not overtake this man. Could not get past him. And it must have been so frustrating for him just being so close, and for his team to be so close but not being able to get past. It just kept going. It kept going for so many laps. And he got him eventually because Lewis obviously still hadn't pitted. But oh my god, this went on for a long time. Perez then gets Lando for P2. Perez then remained in P2 for the entirety of the race. Behrmann battles Hülkenberg. Quite a hefty battle as well. He kind of reports that Hülkenberg's going a lot slower than him. And obviously he gets him in the end on the main straight. But they had a couple swap arounds, so that was good. But also, all he could have done with fighting him less and conserving his tires, because I think Hülkenberg's allowed to pit anyway. But it was great entertainment, so we won't complain too much. Lap 22. Kevin Magnussen gets another 10-second penalty for leaving the track and overtaking Yuki. So Kevin now has 20 seconds of penalties. And this is where it got real fun. So obviously, as I mentioned, Nico Hülkenberg hadn't pitted yet. Kevin's obviously, his race is done. His race is done with 20 seconds of penalties. You know, there's nothing he can do. So Kevin has 20 seconds of penalties, nothing he can do, like, race is done for him. Nico hasn't pitted, so what Kevin does is hold up four cars behind him for most of the race, if not fucking all of it from this point onwards. So he has behind him, he has Albon, Yuki, Esteban, and Logan Sargeant. And then latterly, Valtteri Bottas and Daniel Ricciardo. And when you listen to Kevin's onboard and you hear how little he's using the throttle, this man is going, he's just cruising. He'd be cruising for the rest of the race. It was so funny. Obviously not funny for the car still behind him, but so funny to watch. They just couldn't get past him this entire race. And the gap between them and then Nico Hülkenberg, who was two places ahead, I believe, just kept getting bigger and bigger, and it just kept going. And I think it got up to, I probably have in my notes how big it got to, because it was quite something. Meanwhile, Charles is hunting down Lando for P3, obviously gets him in the end. McLaren start reporting Lewis for underbraking, obviously frustrated that Oscar is stuck behind him, but nothing comes of that. But I guess it was kind of also their way of being like, Oscar, you need to get past him. It's obviously, like, Oscar was losing so much time, and it really, like, prevented him being able to catch up to the other cars because he was stuck behind 7-time world champion Lewis Hamilton. So yeah, the 5-car battle between K-Mag, quite phenomenal. By lap 28, so this battle kind of started sort of lap 25, lap 26, we'll say. By lap 28, the gap to Hülkenberg's at, like, over 13 seconds. Yuki then gets Kevin on the main straight, managed to get past him, and then Kevin immediately gets him back, so Yuki's stuck behind him again. And then during this, because of that battle, Ocon then gets Yuki, obviously still behind K-Mag, but Ocon then gets in front of Yuki. So funny. Then by lap 31, the gap that K-Mag has managed to achieve is around 19 seconds. And this is when Danny Rick and Valtteri joined the party. So he's now got 6 cars behind him. So funny. He may not have been driver of the day because obviously he had 20 seconds of penalties and he did cause massive damage to Albon. But we'll call him teammate of the day because this was quite something. Alex gets Yuki for P14. Still kind of pointless because they're stuck behind Kevin. But at lap 34, Nico Hülkenberg pits finally. Gets his first pit stop in. And literally still comes out ahead of Kevin Magnussen and 6 cars behind him. Kevin Magnussen was the Pied Piper of Saudi Arabia that day. So funny. Yeah, Piastri versus Lewis is still going on throughout all of this. Lewis is on these, like, worn out mediums at this point, because obviously he's still not pitted, and he's still got Oscar behind him, showing, you know, the skills of a world champion. In lap 35, Oscar breaks late, and he does get past Lewis, but goes off track and has to give it back. And then Lewis pits anyway, because Lewis hadn't pitted yet. So it was kind of like Oscar just needs to bide his time, but also he needs to get in front of him. But he'd struggled for so long that the gap was too big at that point, so he could have just, you know, chilled. Baron was ahead of both of them, but he was still like a catchable time away, so he was also going to have to defend against them most likely. Or this is what it was looking like. Lando pits at a 4.1. That was like him finally pitting in lap 37. Too big at one, it stinks. But does come out in P8 ahead of Hamilton, so not too bad. Lewison goes on the radio complimenting Lando's speed, but then also gets annoyed because Lando was weaving down the main straight, obviously to break the toe, so he wasn't giving Lewis that extra boost. But he got noted by race control because the last move was probably a little bit too close to the braking zone. So he gets a black and white flag warning, but that's it. Joe still hadn't pitted. This is when I know Joe has not pitted yet. Obviously, the rules in F1, you have to pit once during a race. And I'm like, Joe was up in like P11, I'm going to say. But like, obviously fighting for points. Incredible drive from being starting at the back after he's, you know, smashed his car. And I'm going, God, they're not pitted Joe yet. And like, there's not that much left of this race. They're really leaving it dangerous. I thought they were leaving Lando out late. But they really left Joe out late. And they didn't pit him until right at the very end, and obviously ruined his race because he came out at the back. So that was annoying because I was really rooting for Joe. Ollie was still up in P7 holding on, putting in some good times. They were predicting that Lando was going to catch Ollie, but didn't happen. For Ollie to be the second top Brit, I mean, the Brits were four in a row, and everyone keeps memeing it. The little screenshot of the time, the standings, saying that's what they're going to tell the kids One Direction were. Yeah, so Lando and Lewis are really close to Ollie. Ollie's obviously fighting for these big points, really, in P7, especially on a debut F1 race. And Ollie's dad, again, pacing around this garage. Bless him. And then, obviously, driver of the day votes happen. Obviously, talk about mine at the end. But Ollie Bearman, I think he had like 50% of the votes at this point, which, yeah, no surprise. The rest of the race was pretty calm, other than feeling very anxious for Ollie, as well as his dad pacing around the garage. That kind of was how we were all feeling at this point. Because, I mean, no matter what, Ollie was going to get points at this stage, because even if Lando almost got him, he would still get points. But we wanted him to get these points in P7. What a result to be ahead of a world champion. Yeah, lap 49, Daniel hits curb and spins. Obviously recovers it like it's just a wee 180. But karma, we'll call that once again. Yeah. So Max Verstappen obviously won, no shock. It was his 9th win in a row, which obviously I think only 3 drivers have done before, one of those being him. And his 100th podium. So Max has had 188 race starts, I believe, and 100 podiums in those 188 starts. And his own comment on that was, oh, that's a lot of missed podiums, but that's unbelievable. If there's a driver who's done more than that, please tell me, because that is just such a statistic. So yeah, it's Max, Checo, and then Charles. Good result. I don't get that excited when Charles is on the podium. I've said this before, but it's not that exciting, because I expect more from him. It was a really solid race, pretty exciting, and Ollie was obviously my driver of the day as well as the overall driver of the day. But also K-Mag, if you just sort of ignore the penalties and the smashing into Albon. But the entertainment side of things, absolutely driver of the day. And yeah, after the race, Lewis and George hang back to speak to Ollie and congratulate him. Carlos is complimenting him. Charles is complimenting him as well. He also, Ollie said in an interview, he had a text from Sebastian Vettel as well. All very sweet, full of praise for them. And also K-Mag, so on top of K-Mag being, you know, the most entertaining driver of the day, he also still finished with 20 seconds of penalties. He still finished P12. Like, what? So good. Actually, so, like, he was really the highlight of the race. Him and Ollie made it perfect. Yeah. No, it was a good weekend. I enjoyed it, other than, you know, my missing Thursday, my confused state on Friday. And yeah, the race was pretty good. Australia next. We all remember what happened in Australia last year in those last like 4 laps, and it's at 4 in the morning, so I'm either going to stay up real late or try and wake up early, but I feel staying up late might be the option. Last year for qualifying, I went on a night out and then came back in and watched it. I thought that was quite smart. But I think qualifying might be on at like 6 in the morning or 5. So it's slightly more reasonable than 4 in the morning for a race. Also in the race last year, I woke up 15 minutes late and Charles was out. So that was good. And then Carlos obviously had his penalty at the end and cried, and that made me cry. So it wasn't a good weekend. And was Oscar out as well? I can't remember. Because everyone was bloody out. The Alpines took each other out. It was quite something. So I am looking forward to Australia. And I would love to see Oscar do really well in Australia. Home race for him and obviously Daniel, but we don't care about him on this podcast as much as we care about Oscar. Yeah. But we have a week off to kind of relax again before Australia. I don't know if I'll do a podcast next week. I guess I think it depends on if I've got any particular things I want to talk about or you want me to talk about, or if there's any big news, because then I might have to roll out a wee podcast. Don't know if I'll make another one on the Christian Horner stuff, just because I've said what I need to say, unless there's any dramatic developments. Any dramatic developments, or he obviously, the rumors come true and he's let go, maybe I'll talk about it. But yeah, it was a good weekend. Also, Ollie was the first British driver to score points on debut since 2011, which is pretty exciting. Yeah. And Charles got the fastest lap, so it was a wee bonus point there. Yeah, that was kind of everything. Wow. I've really waffled on here. We'll see how it sounds when I listen back. Still getting used to the solo presenting. But I think that was not too shabby. My posture is probably horrendous, but at least the camera was out for it, so you didn't see that. Yeah, enjoy the rest of your week. This has been Gals in the Pit Wall with me, Catherine. And I will see you soon. Either next week or back for Australia. We'll guess we'll see. Bye!